So let's jump in. I'll formally introduce you in a second. I've got your formal bio, but before I do, I just want to kind of speak for a moment about why I asked Monica to come, and also just from my heart and experience about Monica. So the reason why I wanted to have this guest teacher training and this bonus content on money mindset is actually twofold. First of all, and most importantly, because when we are building our businesses and when we're putting ourselves out there to coach and to grow our coaching businesses, of course, you guys know, I don't have to tell you, for me, in my experience, one of the most important things is to have incredible, masterful skills. But the other part of being able to grow your business is being able to market. And then the third part is all of the inner work. And a big piece of inner work that is vital for you to be able to grow your business is how you approach money, what you think about money, how you use money, how you step into the energy flow of money, you know, all of that, your money mindset. And so that's the biggest reason why I wanted to have this conversation with all of you, because I feel like it's a vital success ingredient for all of you as you move forward and grow your businesses wherever you're at with your business. The other little bonus to the conversation that Monica and I are going to have today is that, you know, whether you're growing a business or in a 9-to-5 job or even don't have a job at all, your money mindset is actually vital to your experience of life and experience as a human being. And, you know, as we talk more about money, you'll see why. And so today's call, you know, just as a bonus, in addition to help you grow your business, is going to give you more insight into your clients and how they might be thinking about money and approaching money, and then what obstacles that throws up in the coaching. So that's why we're here today. And before I read Monica's official bio, I just want to say that I have my hand on my heart right now as I'm kind of thinking and talking about you, Monica, because I'm so just honored to have you here and thrilled to be able to share you with everybody. Monica is a graduate of Sacred Depths and also Into the Depths, the facilitator training. But more than that, Monica and I go back 15 years. We met back when I was in my late 20s or early 30s in New York City, and she is a gem. She is one of the most successful business owners that I know. She is an incredible coach with so much experience. Her clients adore her because she just brings, I mean, just even in all the conversations that Monica has so generously had with me about my business, she brings so much to the table for entrepreneurs. It's insane. And so I'll read your actual bio now, Monica. I'm just so thrilled to have you here. So Monica Shaw is a 7-figure business coach who helps entrepreneurs build businesses that support their ideal lifestyles. After receiving her MBA from the Kellogg School of Management and working in marketing for L'Oréal Paris, Monica left corporate to start her first company and then her second company, Revenue Breakthrough. Today, she takes her clients step-by-step through building, growing, and expanding their businesses. She combines her business acumen with her intuition and her healing abilities, which, by the way, I had an opportunity to experience them a few weeks ago. They are unrivaled. So she combines her business acumen and her intuition and healing abilities to help her clients get unstuck, to eliminate self-sabotage, and move through fear. She's also the author of Getting Rich, You're Doing It Backwards, I love that, and Pause, 52 Questions That Lead to More Money and Time. I'm so glad you made it, Monica. Yay!
I'm so glad I'm here, and I so apologize for the technology issues.
No worries. I actually had trouble getting in too. It took me a minute or two, so I'm just glad you're here. So let's dive right in. I'm really excited to talk about money. And let's just start with the basics. So can you tell us why so many of us are working our tails off and not making enough?
Yeah, it's so interesting because really what it comes down to is that for most of our lives, we are told not to talk about money. So we grow up. And, you know, in every room that I teach this in, about 25% of the room to 30% raises their hand when I ask the question, who's here got in trouble? Because you ask questions like, how much does mommy make? Or how much does daddy make? Or how come we can't have that car? Or how come we don't live in a house like that? And any questions that were related to money, we got in trouble for. And then as we got older, you know, we're trained at work not to talk about money. You definitely don't, like, sit next to your office mate and you're, like, south to them and are like, hey, what you make? And we're, even when people get, like, raises at work, you might buy them a drink or, like, tell them congratulations, but you don't ask how much money they make. And then when you get into business, suddenly, it's like overnight, you become an entrepreneur. And then overnight, you're expected to ask for money every day, all the time. And not just ask for money, but, like, look at your numbers. Do things like determine what your conversion rate is. Look at things like your expenses. Look at your revenue. Look at your profits. Look at calculate numbers on what's working for you and not working for you. And suddenly, it's like, oh, now you're supposed to be like best friends with money and numbers and math and tracking, where all of these things were like not allowed before. And it, I think so many of us, it's like one big bait and switch. Yeah. Not to mention the fact that a lot of folks in your tribe and mine too, Joanna, are spiritual folks who are super heart-centered, which is amazing as I'm part of that as well. But for those of us that are in that role, not only were we not really, like, not only do we have this whole not being allowed to talk about money aspect, but we also have this other whole set of beliefs around it not being spiritual to ask for money, or even underlying subconscious or conscious contracts around not being allowed to share your gifts or not being allowed to ask for money for what you do. So there's a whole sort of package of all this stuff that prevents us from, you know, it's like suddenly we're like thrown into the pool and we don't even know how to swim. That's
yeah.
really what the money piece is like as an entrepreneur.
Yeah, I so resonate with so much of what you just shared. And as you were talking both about the spiritual piece and also just about, you know, how we were never able to talk about it, and it's taboo. The word that just kept on going through my mind is shame. You know, shame, shame, shame. Whether you have money or you don't money, or you know about your money or you don't, is like when we're taught not to talk about money, it's implicit that there's a shame in being interested in money.
It's true. I was just listening to a podcast on it was one of the famous podcasts on NPR, and I believe it's Death, Sex, and Money is the title. And it was funny because my husband said, you have to listen to this. And the whole podcast was about a young woman who lived in Brooklyn, and she couldn't afford to pay rent anymore because she didn't have enough money. And the nature of the podcast and everyone that was talking in the podcast and about the podcast was talking about how hard it is to live in New York and how rents have increased so much and how difficult it is for young people to survive. And I was just astounded at the underlying thing that they never talked about, which was that she never asked for help. Here was this young person living in Brooklyn. She never talked about her money situation. She never asked for help from her neighbors. She had all these people interviewing her. They never once spoke about the fact that what she was carrying was money shame. And everybody who was interviewing her and everyone in the community, everybody bought into the shame instead of bringing to the surface the truth, which is that if she had just talked about the fact that she needed money and asked for help around it, I'm certain she would have found a better job or more jobs to be able to support herself with. And I see this happening all the time. It's like we'd rather struggle and tolerate less or even give up on the things that are important to us than to learn to talk about money and to learn to ask for it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so true. I'm like just nodding my head, yeah, at everything that you're saying. Yeah, I try to make a point of talking about money with my kids for this exact reason. So I know that you often say that money loves to be understood. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah. So money is an energy, and I know many probably already know that or think that, but as with any sort of energy, you have a relationship with it. And it's interesting because much of our relationship with money is really unconscious, like we're not aware of it. And what I want to do is bring awareness to your relationship with money. And the example that I like to use here is that if you think about your relationship with your family, like if you're the oldest in your family or the youngest in your family or the middle in your family, often when you go home to see your family, you flip back into the role that you were. And so for me, I'm the youngest in my family. When I go home to see my family, I immediately go back into playing the role of the younger sister. So I get really quiet. I don't like have loud opinions, and I let my older sister make me breakfast, even though for over 40 years now, you know, or at least 30 of those 40 years, I've been making my own breakfast. And so suddenly it's like I become more helpless, more vulnerable, less powerful because I play the role of the younger sister. And I wasn't always even aware that I was flipping into this until I got home and saw it. And for me, at least, and I think this happens in so many families, when you have some sort of shakeup, you realize everybody's role. And for us, that happened when my mom passed away. Suddenly, like, all of our roles were shaken up. And suddenly, I woke up to realizing that I had sort of subconsciously fell into this, like, role of the quiet younger sister, and I had the power to shift it. And I suddenly started to be like have conversations more and get into better relationships with my nieces and nephews and have better conversations with my dad. And I find that with entrepreneurs, we're all doing the same thing with money. There's some sort of subconscious role that you're playing with it, your relationship with it. And when you become aware of it, you can intentionally shift it. And so that relationship falls into four different money types. And I'll go through each type. Now, keep in mind there's no positive or negative on any of the types. So even though when I'm in a room full of people and teaching this, there's always like excitement on some types and less excitement on other types. Please know that like nothing is better than one is not better than the other. Also know that you can be more than one type. You don't just have to be one. So the first type that I always like to start with is avoiders. So if you're an avoider, chances are that even during this call already, you've started to do other things. So like you're texting, you're checking email, you're thinking about other things because the very topic of money has already caused you to avoid, whether it was conscious or subconscious, you're already doing that. And as an avoider, there's a tendency for you to not know what's in your bank account, to not know what's on your credit cards. You have to force yourself to look at your numbers. The only real time of the year that you know your numbers well is like right around tax time because you have to give them to the bookkeeper or the accountant, and then you also get them back. Like you get your reports back from the accountant and you know how much you have to pay. You tend also as an avoider to have like huge piles of mail stacking up and such. Because you have huge piles of mail stacking up, you don't always know what's going on in your business. So the tendency of an avoider is to overwork and overworry. And you're overworking because you're not exactly sure how much work you need to do to generate a certain amount of outcome, whether that outcome is the number of clients or money, if you're measuring it by money, or even just impact that you want to make in the world, so you tend to just kind of work all the time. And the same is true for the worry piece. Because you're not sure how things are landing, there's a tendency for you to over-worry as well. And so just know that if you're an avoider, it can be the belief of, well, it's a belief that really stems from the fact that a lot of avoiders will say to me, Monica, but, you know, I'm a manifester, and I don't need to look at my numbers. And if I look at my numbers, it just gets in the way of my manifesting. So if you're somebody that's feeling that way, like I've been able to manage to pull this off, know that the beautiful thing about avoiders is that you're also powerful dreamers and manifestors and creators. And so there's this feeling sometimes that looking at things will get in the way of your creation and your dreaming and your vision of a bigger and better impact that you're going to be creating. And know this, that's actually not true. As I've been working with avoiders and all, you know, entrepreneurs now for over 15 years in my business. And what I can say to be true is that once you start to really track and look at your numbers as an avoider, your power to manifest and create gets even bigger. It becomes even more powerful. And I'll go back and talk about a couple of things that each type can do to sort of rein it in and to shift your relationship with it. But one of the most important things to remember if you are an avoider is that looking at numbers makes you even more powerful. That when you stop avoiding, you can create even more. The next type. And the next type, I'll do savers as our next type. Because the opposite of, well, it's not truly the opposite, but definitely the cousin of an avoider of an avoider is a saver. Now, you know you're a saver if you've got tons of money in your bank account and you love to save. You know, I know I've met a saver when they literally ask me questions like, Monica, what's your favorite app to track money? Like, do you use Mint? Do you use QuickBooks? Like, they're like hanging out and talking about all that stuff. For a saver, looking at your bank account's like a sport. You love to do that, like multiple times a day. Also know that you're a saver if you know exactly how much money is on your credit card and you can pay it off. You know exactly, like, to a dollar what you need to pay it off. So even if you don't have a ton in your bank account, you know exactly, like, your money management is to a T. Like, you know what to do, and you know, and you have it very structured. Now, the thing about being a saver, there's nothing per se wrong with it unless it's getting in your way. And where I see it getting in the way, and this is sort of more of the shadow side or the darker side of a saver, is I meet a lot of savers who are overworking. So you're literally getting up at 6 a.m., you're doing the 6 to 7:30 a.m. thing, and then waking the kids up and getting them to school, then working during the day, and then getting back on the computer at 10 o'clock at night and working till 1 a.m. and then sleeping for 4 or 5 hours and doing the whole thing again the next day. And it's like every week gets more and more painful. And that's a classic case of a saver who's overworking because she's afraid. She's afraid to let go of the money and spend the money because she's lost faith that the money's going to come back to her. Mm-hmm. But sometimes you can be a saver as a result of a money trauma. And what I mean a money trauma is if you've been through like a bankruptcy or a divorce or a partnership that fell through where you really lost a lot of money. And so therefore you stopped trusting money and you stopped trusting yourself in the process. If you can also just be a saver if you've been modeling, right? Like you grew up with somebody who was also a saver, then you could become a saver as well. So the thing about being a saver, one of the beliefs about being a saver, and this isn't every saver, but I do think it's a lot of savers, but often folks who were like the favorite child in their family or the gifted child in their family, or in some cases the only sane one in their family. And because of that, because you were the favored one, because you were the same one in your family, you want to keep that status, whether you realize it or not, by keeping money in your bank account. It's a method or source of approval. Even if your parents aren't alive anymore, even if the people that raised you, parents are not alive anymore, there's a tendency to still keep money in the bank account. So just if you're a saver on this call, a great question to ask yourself is to pause and ask yourself, who am I looking for approval from? And what kind of approval am I looking for?
Mm. Yeah, that
and then,
sense.
Yeah.
And I just want to say I love that. That makes so much sense.
Yeah, it's interesting because a lot of savers, and it's, you don't even have to be quote unquote primary type saver to answer that question. I think for a lot of us, we're trying to gain approval through how we use money, and we also attribute shame, right, to how we use money. And then, like, from family, you know, whether they're around or not, it's a big part of how this plays out. As well, in fact, I've even met a lot of entrepreneurs who have created distance from themselves and their families because they have shame around how much money they're not making or how much money they are making.
Mm-hmm.
Through this whole thing. And then the next type so we've got savers, we've got the avoiders. The next type is spenders. Now, spenders are the hedonists of the group. Those of you, if I were actually looking at all of you right now, the minute I said savers, you guys start waving your hands at me. I'm sorry, spenders. Yeah, you start waving your hand at me. The reason for that is because spenders love to be spenders. They bring joy. Sure. Then you know you're a spender if you're the person who usually picks up the bill at dinner, the one that doesn't worry about how much things cost. But there is sometimes a more dark or secretive side of being a spender, and that is that sometimes, for a lot of times if you're a spender and it feels out of control, you can't pay off your credit card bills, you're spending more than you're making, and or you're spending on things that bring emotional satisfaction to you, you don't really need them. In fact, I remember reading in a magazine, there was a woman who was pretty famous. She had just sold her company for literally millions of dollars. And she told a story about how she sometimes gets into an emotionally depressed place, goes out, buys shoes, and then is so ashamed of her spending that she comes home when her husband's not home, takes the shoes out of the box, puts them in the closet, throws everything away, takes out the garbage, she can't find it, and then pretends the shoes were already in her closet. And this is a woman who's completely financially independent. Like, she has no, it's her money. She has no need to hide it. But this is sort of the guilt and shame that can come with being a spender, even if you've got plenty of money that you're spending. It's mm-hmm. just that feeling of, like, I don't really need this, but I'm going to buy it anyway. And I'm feeling sad or hungry or depressed or tired or lonely, and I'm purchasing things for those reasons. And so one of the things to notice if you're a spender is to ask yourself the question, do I really need this? Do I really want this? Or am I trying to fill a hole? And what is that hole? Because I found that the hole does stay consistent. So, for example, for me, my spending habits, they so get kicked up when I'm disappointed. So if I've had a disappointment in my business, all of a sudden I go onto Amazon and I start buying books, like way more books than I could ever read, way more books than I need. I'll buy programs. I'll literally go on like a buying spree for anything that will make that disappointment feel like I could somehow control it. And again, it's just a hole, right? Instead of feeling the disappointment, there's a tendency to spend, to try to buy it away or make it better. I've also seen the spending habit kick up in entrepreneurs when you give money to somebody who's like a marketing agency, for example, and you're like, okay, here's $5,000, just go do all my marketing. And then 6 months later, they haven't done anything, or you haven't really met with them, or you don't know what they've done, and it's like,
let me just throw money at this, and then it'll be taken care of.
Yeah. It's and that's also just a spending thing that can happen. So one of the things to just start to ask yourself and to look at is like, what are my patterns here, right? When do I start to spend, and what is that about? As well. Now, the fourth type is the martyrs, and martyrs are folks that, if you know you're a martyr, if you're on this call and you're listening and you're like, I just wish we didn't ever have to ask for money. Like, I just wish I could be so good that I would be able to do my service or hand over my product, and the person receiving it would look at me, and they would just hand me their card, and it would all be telepathic, and we wouldn't have to do any of this. And trust me, if I could figure out a way to get us all to telepathically sell, I would. I definitely would. But it doesn't work like that. I ultimately, I think what's interesting about being a martyr is you're usually somebody who wants to barter more than ask for money. You're also somebody, this is a classic sign of a martyr, is that you're on a call and let's say that your price point is $500. You might start by saying the price is $500, or it's two payments of $250, or one payment of $100, or three payments of $25, or, you can just give me $25. That's fine. And then you just, suddenly, like, you haven't let the person get a word in edgewise. You're kind of going off, and now suddenly you're down to $25. And all of it is sort of based in this fear. And the fear underlying a martyr, it varies across the board, but it's related, usually the martyr fear is related to a story, or what I like to call a money voice, that you have in your head around, I just can't, I'm not allowed to ask for money, or I'm not allowed to be visible, or being spiritual is wrong, or if I actually get money for my gifts, then I'm doing something wrong. And it has to do with sort of really backtracking for yourself about where did those voices start from. And we're going to talk a little bit more about that on the call today, because everybody has money voices that are coming out for them. It's just that if you're a martyr, and you really sort of predominantly feel like, oh, gosh, like every time I open my mouth to ask for money, I feel like it's just really, really hard. And I often don't or completely avoid it. If you're in that category, chances are you're really being run by that story or by that voice. And it's time for you to really be able to create, to first become aware of the voice that's running the show and be able to create a new one. So I'm going to pause there and just, say if you're listening, it's a good time to identify which type are you. What is your primary type and what is your secondary type? And then from there, start to ask yourself, what are the places in which my type is throwing me out of balance? In other words, where it's not serving me to be a saver, or it's not serving me to be an avoider, or it's not serving me to be a martyr, or it's not serving me to be a spender. There are areas where it is serving you, right? So there are positive aspects of this and negative aspects. But today, I want you to think about, where is this not serving me, and then we'll go into some shifts around it. So Joanna, for you, do you relate to any of those types?
So first I want to say, I don't relate to all of them, but what's so interesting to me is I can see how at some point I was more of one type. Like, I can actually see my evolution a little bit, which is kind of cool, but I'd say hands down the saver is me. And as you were talking, about usually for savers, there's been some kind of trauma. What I was thinking about for me is it wasn't a personal trauma. It's actually a cultural trauma, because both the Holocaust is such a big deal in my family and my ancestry, where it was like one moment my family had so much, and then the next moment they had nothing. And then also because both of my parents are immigrants, and, you know, all that they had to go through to establish themselves financially and all that, like because of both of those things in my family history, that's the trauma for me. So
yeah.
It's not that it happened to me personally. And I can just see so clearly, especially, well, really both. I was going to say especially the Holocaust, but really both, how they contribute to this feeling of, well, you might have it now, but you may not have it tomorrow. And you might be able to make it now, but you may not be able to tomorrow. So, you know, do as much as you can now. And, you know, in addition to, you know, I've gotten my overworking under control most of the time, not always, but in addition to the overworking where I see that it really impacts me, both in my personal life and my business, is that for me, part of saving is also being overly thrifty. And that does serve me in a lot of ways. Like, I like my thriftiness, but I can see how there's certain places in my business right now that if I were willing to spend more money, the impact would be so much bigger for me.
Yeah, and so what's interesting about what you're bringing up is you're bringing up a combination of things. One is sort of the relation. So a couple things. First, that your money type is not only something that was created by you, it is also something that you learn as a model, right, from your parents and from your grandparents and from your ancestors, and can be carried through the generation. So, and you bring up an interesting thing that many of us have to consider, which is if our parents were immigrants in any way, there's a tendency there to feel, to have saving be a huge piece of what we do. And so that also, so it's also like, as you guys are thinking about this, thinking about where you come from culturally, whether what your parents were, and often what happens, like, is that you either go with what your parents were in terms of their types or against it. Like, so if your parents were savers, or you're like, say your dad was a saver, you have a tendency to be a spender, or you have a tendency to be a saver. And you're not only mirroring their types, but you're also mirroring their stories, right? The voices that were in their heads about money and their own insecurities, which, you know, we're going to go into next. So that's also interesting to think about. As you think about your type, it's not just what type you are, what type your parents were, also what type your partner is. So if you are on this call and you are a spender and your partner is a saver, I can guarantee you, you are butting heads around how you spend your money and when you spend your money. If you are a saver and your partner is an avoider, I can also guarantee that you're going to butt heads, because you want to save and account for every dime and every nickel, and your partner is somewhere in la-la land, right, not actually looking at the money, and that probably drives you mad. So that's also a big piece of this. It's just, you know, is looking at what came before you and the other people in your life right now.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see it. It's got many branches.
Yeah. So, it, you know, in terms of the next pieces of it, I think a couple things that are important. You know, I think, Joanna, it actually brings up the next piece, which is the money voices, right? Like the relationship with money and where it came from. Do you want to move into that, Matt?
Yeah. And how it, and I'm sure you'll share this, like also how it affects marketing and business.
Yeah, totally. So let's actually dive in. Is it okay, Joanna, if we do a couple journaling questions?
Sure, yeah.
For folks, so there's something called money voices. And essentially, between the ages of 0 to 7, you were like a sponge. And that sponge means that everything you saw, everything you heard, and everything that you experienced went into your brain and became part of your subconscious and became part of your habits, your beliefs, and your behaviors. And you didn't at that point, from 0 to 7, have the ability to say no to anything. So everything sort of became accepted as a norm and sort of shaped the way you think and see the world right now. So what I like to say is that in your head, everybody's head, there's a conference table, and there's chairs around the conference table, and every chair is a money voice. And those voices come from everything that you saw, heard, and experienced as a child when you were growing up. And what's interesting about those voices, we're going to sort of start to look at what some of those voices are, is those are actually the determinants of how you're dealing with money as an adult in your business and the effects and the outcomes that you're having with money. And in fact, until you get aware of what your money voices are dictating, you're often having conflicting results. Like, you want money, but it's not coming in. Or you want to get a new client, but it seems like every month it's kind of a toss-up as to whether you get them or not. You're often in conflict because your money voices are saying and dictating different things than you actually realize that you're doing. So I'll give you more examples of this as we move through this, but I thought I'd give you guys a chance. This isn't the complete exercise that I do, but it's a portion of it, just given the time that we have right now, for you to sort of get into what's going on. And also realize I'm going to give you a bit of time to answer each question, but you may need more time later to answer the questions as well. So the first question is, what are you struggling with in your business right now? How are you struggling? Now, it could be like there's not enough money. It could be there's not enough clients. It could be that you don't put yourself out there. It could be that you're not getting the things done that you want to get done. What are you struggling with in your business? And just write as much as you want. You want to try to be as concrete and specific as possible. So writing down like specific incidences or occurrences that you've just been struggling with lately, or even disappointments or things that didn't work out the way you wanted. Okay, next question is, when you were young, what did your family and parents, so this could be siblings, grandmother, grandfather, aunties, uncles, brothers, sisters, what did they say about money when you were growing up? What did they say about money? So did they say things like, we can't afford this? What do you think? Money doesn't grow on trees. Who do you think you are? Rockefeller's daughter. Can't you see that that's too expensive? What did they say about money when you were growing up? And you want to think back as much as possible to like specific incidences that happened either when you asked for something or that where money was being spent. And it is also just as important if they didn't talk about money at all. So if they never mentioned money or things just felt like they appeared for you, that's also important to write down. And just remembering as you're answering these questions that these money questions are a little bit like opening a box in your brain that will continue to open. So I find that when people start writing, even if you write things that happened yesterday or last week, that's okay. Like, it doesn't need to be back as far as you can remember if you can't remember things when you were young. Because what will happen is tomorrow you'll be in the shower and you're suddenly going to remember something that happened when you were 8 or 9 or even 6 or 7, and it'll be in relationship to money. So this, I found that this sort of opens the box, and then the box keeps giving you stuff after, you know, after these questions as well. It sort of starts the thinking process.
I love that. I get my best ideas in the shower.
Totally. And then the next question is, what did your parents and or family members, whoever you grew up with, what did they do with the money that they did bring in? What did they do with the money that they did bring in? And my real specific here is, how did they spend the money? So did they spend it on you? Did they spend it on other people? Did they spend it on themselves? Did they go out? Did they give it all away? Did they buy luxury items? Did they only buy necessities? How did they spend the money that they did bring in? I'm just going to give you 30 seconds on that. And again, it's okay if you don't remember. Like, you don't know how they spent the money. Like, things just appeared. Write that down as well. And then last question, what was money like for you growing up? So what was it like? Did you have a lot of money? Did you have a little bit of money? Did you, sometimes people are raised in multiple different households. So like maybe in one household there was a lot of money and another household there was a little bit of money. Sometimes people go through crises growing up. So maybe at one point there was a good amount of money, and then later on something happened and the money went down. What was money like for you growing up? Okay, so I know I didn't give you a ton of time to answer those questions, and I do invite you to spend longer later on them as well. But I want to tie the pieces together with an example, and then we can go from there, which is that everything that you wrote down is what I call, like to call your root money story. And your voices in your head were created from the experiences that you wrote down. And so many of my clients have come to me and they've done their very best to try to grow their businesses through learning more about marketing or learning more about sales. But the connections that they haven't been able to do it, like not in a way that feels, like graceful and in the flow, that everything feels forced. And one of my clients who was in this position, she was a chiropractor, a nutritionist, and a cranial sacral specialist. So you can imagine the training this woman had and the amount of time and money that she had spent really developing her skill set. And she had an office in Union Square in New York City, and she was literally every single month losing money on her business. And when I talked to her about what was going on, essentially she just wasn't charging enough, and she was charging less than a lot of people who just came out of school were charging. And she had been out of school for about 15 years when I met her. So we went into her money voices in her head, and what came up was that when she was little, her parents only spent money on the necessities. They didn't buy anything that was a luxury. In fact, she only had certain outfits that she wore during the week. They were uniforms to school. And then she had four different outfits that she rotated wearing on the weekends. And because of that, the voice in her head, her current money voice. So that's sort of, if you're looking at a four square box, if you were to draw a four square box, the top left would be the root story, right? Which is what happened around money, what you saw, what you heard, the experience around money when you were growing up. And then the next box would be the money voices that were created from that experience. And for her, the money voice that was really affecting her business was, I can only spend money on necessities. Money should not be spent on anything that was a luxury. So if you were to go down to the bottom left of that four square box, you would, the next piece to look at here is, how is this affecting my business? And the way it was affecting her business is that her business was considered a luxury to her. And so because it was considered a luxury, every time she went to go raise her prices, she felt wrong. She felt like she was breaking some sort of rule or code or contract, because people shouldn't be paying for luxuries. They should only be paying for necessities. And as long as she was carrying that voice and following that rule, she was never going to be able to raise her prices without a lot of discomfort in the process. So we created a new money voice for her, and that would be the bottom right box of this square. And the new money voice is, my services can and will save lives, and they are worth every dollar. My services can and will save lives, and they are worth every dollar. And when she started, that's the new money voice. And when she wrote it on seven different pieces of paper, which is what I highly recommend, she started saying it out loud at least three times a day, especially before sales conversations. And within six weeks, she had raised her price once. Within 6 months, she had raised her prices four times, was more than breaking even at her office, and started hiring other chiropractors to work under her. And it was all because she really needed to shift the way that she was thinking about money and give herself a different set of permissions to be able to apply to that money. So when you're looking at this for yourself, just to repeat what this four square looks like, the top left box is your root experience. Like, everything that you answered in that question, reading the questions that you answered. The top right box is the old money voices that were created from your root experiences. The bottom left box is how this is affecting your business currently. And then the bottom right box is your new money voice, or the voice that you want to follow moving forward. Now, keeping in mind here that when you're following a new money voice, whatever new money voice you create. So my new money voice is, money is my rock, and it is always there for me. It will feel like an itchy sweater at first, and it'll feel like, oh my gosh, I'm just totally pretending and making this stuff up. It doesn't even make any sense. But what's interesting, and especially now with what we know about neuroplasticity, is that the moment that you start repeating something new, it starts to create a new groove in your brain. And it is now proven that within 7 to 14 days, you can actually start creating this new groove and like having a new groove in your brain form, so that you can have a new way of thinking and access a new behavior. So the next question to ask yourself when you create your new money voice is, if I actually believed this voice, what is the new action that I would take? If I actually believed this voice, what is the new action that I would take? And move forward from a different place. Now, it does take time, but I do recommend that everyone take a moment and look at your questions and ask yourself, what are the money voices that have been put into my head? Now, one of the things I love about Joanna's crew is that many of you are highly spiritual. So if you believe in past lives, if you believe in traveling here from other planes, if you believe in having soul families, I do want you to get that not only are your money voices created from what happened in this lifetime, but you're also carrying them in from past lifetimes, from ancestors, from soul family, from experiences on the way into this plane as well. So if that is in your belief system, there's that aspect of this as well that we need to look at.
I love that.
So, Joanna, yeah, I mean, at this point, we could go in any direction. Like, I mean, I'm definitely, but I just want to pay attention to time because I know we're at the top of the hour.
Yeah, I want to make sure that people can ask questions if they have any questions for you. But before we do that, just if you could take 2 or 3 minutes, because you are just such toolbox of the inner work that you're presenting is so incredible.
Yes.
But if you could just speak about maybe 1 or 2 outer actions
yes.
that people can take. And also, I want you to, I know you have so many great resources, if you could just share how people can get more of this. And then we'll open up for Q&A for anyone who's still hanging on.
Absolutely. Sure. So if you are still hanging on, I'm happy to help you work out your old money voice and your new money voice when we get to the question piece as you're thinking about this for yourself. Now, getting to the outer tools. Now, what's so interesting about my work and what I do is I combine the inner and the outer tools. I help to clear the money blocks with my, through healing and clearing on the inner level in order to make it easier to do the outer work. So one of the things that people ask me all the time, just to like get straight to the heart of how do you make money? Like, how do I increase money into my bank account? And there's only one way to increase money in your bank account, and that's to ask for it. Like, it is not more complicated than that. It is to ask for it. And there's 2 major categories of asking for money. One is one-on-one in a sales conversation when you're talking to someone and asking them for money, which I know Joanna teaches a lot on the sales conversation piece or the discovery call piece, you might know it as, or strategy session, you might know it as. It's that piece where you ask for money one-on-one. The other way, the other category, is asking for money from one to many. And one to many might be if you are making a sale in the front of a room or making an offer from a video or from a webinar, that's a one-to-many ask. So really the simplest way, right, to increase the money into your bank account is to start asking for it more often. And what I tell my clients is your goal is to ask for money at least 3 times a week if you're building up, if you're trying to ramp up your business. So if you're going to ask for money 3 times a week, then there's a couple things that are helpful as tools for you to remember. The first is I just like to sort of talk about revenue generating activities, which are the activities that are going to lead to having more of these sales conversations. And there's 3 main activities that lead to having more of these sales conversations. One is speaking. That is, in my book, speaking is the number one way to generate sales conversations. And when I mean speaking, I mean doing either your own workshops, your own live events where you're making an offer, or going and speaking in front of community centers or groups, that have your target market in them, like established organizations that have you come as a speaker. The second way is sponsorship. So being able to be out in front of people and get a table. And then the third is webinars. The only caveat with webinars is know that it's hard to make a dent with webinars until you have a list of somewhere at least 1,000 people. That doesn't mean you can't do them before you have a list of 1,000. It just means that they may not be the thing that makes your business like that you get the most fulfillment from, that you get the most sales conversations from, until you have a list that grows a little bit larger. Now, these are just the beginning. These are called revenue generating activities. And what I recommend is that you want to make sure you've got at least one of these revenue generating activities planned every single month. So a speaking event, a sponsorship, a webinar, something that is going to be generating leads so you can hit those sales numbers. Because what these 3 things are what I call mega ask. And a mega ask is a one to many ask. And it's going to put you ahead of the game because you're going to get more leads, right? Because when I say a mega ask here, I mean you're asking for conversations or you're asking for the sale.
Now, that was a quick sort of summary of a revenue generating activity. So I have one more tool, and that's revenue tracking. And what that means is essentially I recommend that you get a piece of paper. I also have revenue trackers that I create. You number that paper 1 through 31. That stands for the days of the month. You put your 60-day goal for how much revenue you want to generate at the top of that paper. And then every day that you bring money in, if it's the second of the month and you brought in $500, you would put $500 next to the number 2. The 10th of the month and you brought in $1,000, you would put $1,000 next to the number 10. And you add it up as you go along. You create the tally and you actually see how am I doing in comparison to my money goal. So the combination of doing the revenue-generating activities with the revenue tracking keeps you focused on generating more money, on filling up that bank account. Now, keep in mind, folks, that all of this is also in conjunction with having a clear idea of your why so that you can be inspired every day. And so sometimes I like to put my clear idea of my why on top of my revenue tracker so I know why I'm doing what I'm doing. Sometimes it's my 2-week vacation. Sometimes it's the foundation I want to create. Sometimes it's the new pair of shoes I want to buy. Like, it just depends on what inspires me in that moment, but really connecting to your why while you're creating that. And then as a piece before we jump into Q&A, for those of you that are like, wow, this is all really interesting, and she's talking like 79 miles an hour, totally got you. I have a free report. And it is called my money making marketing calendar, and it lists all the revenue generating activities in order, how often you should do them, whether you should do them daily, weekly, monthly, or quarterly. So you can totally opt in to grab that. It's at revenuebreakthrough.com/marketing calendar, revenuebreakthrough.com/marketing calendar. And it will just give you a good sense of not only how to do the revenue generating activities, but also how to do the revenue tracking.
Yeah, I just want to encourage anyone who's interested to sign up for that. Because Monica, I mean, there's so many things I love about you, and one of them is that you don't like throw all of this extra information that doesn't make sense. Like, that report is so clear, and it just gives some really clear, energizing directives on how to move forward and take some better actions. So thank you.
Yes, I don't think it needs to be complicated. I think that sometimes I think the reason we complicate it is because we're afraid of the simplicity of it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
I have no idea what you're talking about. Awesome. Well, I want to give people an opportunity to just, you shared so much. So anyone that has any questions on the money types or your money type or the money voices that came through or how it relates to business or business action, you've got a couple of minutes, Monica, if there are a question or two. Awesome. So start to, anything that you guys want to ask Monica? All right, it looks like, oh, here we go. We've got a question. Jamie.
Well, since no one else is piping up twice in one day. Hi, Monica. I would love to have the experience, the process of changing my money voice.
Oh, awesome. And this was Jamie, is that what your name?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Awesome. So, Jamie, what do you do? First of all, what's your business?
Well, I'm actually retired now.
Okay. So are you doing any kind of putting any sort of service out there?
I am, but it's all volunteer, and I'm not really at this point. Look, I'm a climate change activist, and I support other climate change activists.
Perfect.
And I'm an educator and so forth.
Perfect. Okay, great, great, great. And is there any struggle that you're having or discomfort
I'm a spender. I'm a spender.
Okay.
I have plenty of money, and I don't pay any attention to it, and I'm a spender.
Okay.
So I fit number 1 and number 3 to a T.
Yeah, spender avoider, it sounds like, yeah?
Spender avoider, right. Spender avoider,
yeah,
exactly.
Which can be it sounds like you're doing pretty well with it because you're not super concerned, but it can be a lethal combination if that combination isn't the best combination to save a lot of money. But tell me, Jamie, what was money like for you growing up?
It was really a non-issue. All those questions that you asked, I kind of answered them all the same. I mean, we always had enough money. I never once remember my parents saying we couldn't afford something. It also wasn't a big deal. My parents were really straightforward people, and we had what we need. We always had what we wanted for hobbies and vacations, and my dad got laid off once when I was in seventh grade, and we immediately left on an eight-week driving trip around the country. So that tells me, we had a cushion. And didn't talk about it a lot, but literally no issues about money. Just not a big deal. Both my parents were very easygoing, I guess, in their own relationships with money.
Okay, great. So I have a question for you.
I want to throw one thing in there, Jamie, because I want you to, just because I know you a little bit, and I really want you to get the most that you can out of this. And
okay.
tell me if it's accurate, but whereas the money isn't the big piece for you, what I know you want, you've just started working with activists, but I know you want to make more of an impact and get the word out to more activists so that they can do their work better. Am I getting that right?
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, so I just wanted to throw that in there because for you, even though you're retired, you're not retired, you've still got big work out there.
Well,
in front
I have
of you.
Big, I do, I have big work, and actually that makes me think of, in the context of this presentation, I'm certainly about making money in my business. That's not the thing. But I just, in my life, I'm a spender and an avoider. I just came back from a trip to Europe, and then all of a sudden my bank account didn't have any money in it because somebody dropped the ball and didn't send me the check when they should have, and I'm out of money. It's like I have money, but why am I out of money? You know, it's embarrassing.
Okay.
It's ridiculous. It's like I should get this figured out. So that's my thing. It's not specifically related to a business. It's just every day.
Okay, great. So I'm going to throw out – so that's great information from Joanna, and I'm going to throw out – so, Jamie, there is a little bit of – frustration there, right? I can feel it. It's like, okay, well, at least with this Europe piece, right? Like I got back and there's not money in my bank account. So sometimes with stories like yours, Jamie, and you can tell me if you feel like this resonates or it doesn't resonate. When you grew up in a family where money wasn't an issue or a concern, and sometimes there's a belief of, I shouldn't have to look at money. Like, I don't have to look at it. Because you grew up and it was always there and it was always taken care of, there's a habit sometimes that is created of, I don't have to look at money. Because it's just always there. And it is, right? It sounds like it has been for you, but it's not necessarily comfortable to be avoiding it. How does that sound?
That's just about right. I prefer to just not have to deal with the details.
Yeah.
And that's true for other things. I have a big pile of mail here, which I just as soon have someone else take care of. All of what you described in that avoidance is really the place that bugs me. I mean, money does seem to flow, and it looks like it's going to be flowing. So I'm really not, and maybe that's part of it too, I'm not ultra concerned. But I don't like this behavior in myself. It frustrates me to be in this position over and over, silly things.
Yeah. So the beliefs are twofold. One, I think that what you picked up from your family growing up is I shouldn't have to look at it. And when I do, it's annoying to me. And number two is money's always flowing, which is a good thing, but I don't have to look at it. It will always just come, which can also mean, Jamie, sometimes that there's a feeling of like, when I look at it, it flows less, like a little bit of a fear.
No, I wouldn't say so. I wouldn't say I have that fear. It's just boring. it's just boring. It's tedious. And
yeah.
I had a major depression 20 years ago. And since then, my mind is just kind of confused about details like that. I mean, I was a lawyer, so I used to be like super, super sharp. And now I feel like I just can't carry the detail. So some of it's just that. And I, you know.
Okay. So then the belief is, it's, you know, money's annoying and I don't want to deal with the details and it's confusing. And what's interesting about this, Jamie, is that you're working with people who are activists who probably share that same belief. And because it's a detail they don't want to deal with either. They would much rather change the world in a big way. And do their work in the world versus having to work out the details of money. So for you.
Yeah, I think a lot of them are willing to work for very little, and that's how they start out until they get burned out or realize they need more to make a life and a family, and then they switch over. And so I do, it's interesting. I mean, you're dealing with money. It's probably one of the, it's the prime thing in the first two coaching clients that I have coming that are activists. So I know it's, you know, you're right about that.
So one of your motivations for shifting this, I'm just putting it out there, even though you know money flows to you and you have enough money and you've got that piece worked out, could be that the more you shift your own model around this, the more you're going to serve them to be able to shift theirs. Just from just because we model subconsciously our mentors, whether we realize it or not. So that could just be a motivation for you to think about this differently. So I'm just going to throw out a different way to think about it for you, a new money voice.
Okay,
and
cool.
That new money voice could be something to the effect of, when I look at my money and I'm organized about it, I make much bigger change on the planet. Or I can make much bigger change on the planet. And for you, that bigger change on the planet is through the activists. For them, it's going to be something they're more, you know, whatever their specific degree of activism is.
It's also in terms of what's the word when you give away money? Philanthropy. You know, I mean,
yeah.
I'm generous to a fault. I'm a philanthropist. So that's the other piece of it for me where I do feel there's a direct impact. And, you know, I know when I have money, it feels great to see a good cause and say, I'm going to help you with this business or help you with this something.
Yep. So
okay,
when
so
I.
Two pieces through the clients and also through my own. Okay.
Yeah.
Yep.
So did you like that statement? When I look at money and I'm organized around it, I can make a much bigger change on the planet. It could also be I could make a much bigger change on the planet and give away more money.
Well, the second part of it is totally comfortable. It's the first part of it, the when I look at it and I'm organized.
Yeah.
I just, you know, makes me think I just need to get a bookkeeper, really. I mean, that's responsible way to handle it, you know?
Yep. And there's nothing wrong with that. I love bookkeepers. I recommend them for all of my clients. So
it would be more responsible to do that. It would be more responsible to do that than to just keep avoiding it and limping along like I do. You know, that
great.
It would be, yeah.
Great. And that's a great example of taking an action that is based on the new belief. Do you see what I mean? When I look at my numbers and I'm organized, I make a bigger change on the planet. The next thought you immediately had was, well, it makes me think I should hire a bookkeeper. Do you see what I mean? Like that's actually in connection with that first thought.
I got it. Okay. Okay.
And so it's not supposed to be comfortable. Like when you're like that first half, I totally get that. It's a completely new way of thinking for you. And so it's like an invitation to step into what that would be like for you and what changes that would make. And then when you're making those changes, just knowing that you're also going to be a model for all the activists that are following you as well.
Yeah, thank you. That last piece is important. I feel like I am, a lot of them are a lot younger than me, so there's a part of a kind of a mentoring feeling to it all, which is, makes me feel good. If something I've learned can be of benefit, that does feel really, that is a part of who I am. So, okay. Thank you so much. I thought
awesome.
It was going to be
awesome.
So quick. That was quick. Thanks.
Great. Great, great, great.
We both talk 94 miles a minute. That helps.
Yep, good speed. We're at good speed. Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Thanks, Jamie, for bringing that forward. It was helpful for me to listen to also. And Monica, thank you
so much for all that you shared today. I just feel like you shared so many golden nuggets. Thank you. I appreciate it so much.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Joanna. And for those that hung on, just know that I appreciate it, and I appreciate your patience through the technology issues as well.
Great. Well, I hope everyone, like Monica said earlier, you know, this is going to work through you over the next few days. So take all that came through today and just pay attention and see what more wants to come through, especially about your money voices over the next few days. Go to the Revenue Breakthrough for that great PDF on different actions that can be taken and when and how much and all of that. And I'll see you all on Wednesday for our Accountability Structures training call. I'm wishing you all a wonderful rest of your day. Bye.